just after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. A Friday edition of Smith and Jones. As we get a double dip today, Jonesy, you and I, as we will be on the air right now for the next hour, bringing it up to Writer's Block at 2 o'clock and then back later on this evening for the tip-off between the Raptors and Heat down in Tampa. Second straight against Miami as the Raptors look to bounce back from the frustrating loss and lackluster performance a couple of nights ago in the loss to the Heat. Jimmy Butler, again, not expected to be in the lineup for the Heat in this ballgame, so certainly a chance for the Raptors to bounce back, get the job done, and at least get the split against the Heat before they go into two straight against the Pacers on Sunday and Monday. We will talk later on in the hour about the Raptors, and we won't necessarily just talk about current day Raptors and talk about tonight's game, but we'll go down memory lane a little bit, and let's maybe save most of our conversation, Jonesy, for later in the show when we chat with Leo Routens. But what are we going to chat about later? 15 years ago today, 15 years ago today, Kobe Bryant puts up 81 points against the Raptors.
You know, Eric, somewhere in our archives at the Fan, and I had it, and you know, you move, you change computers and stuff like that. One of our former board ops engineers, Rafi Sarabian, put together a 8 or 9 minute.
Yep, I remember that.
8 or 9 minute collage of you and I acting like 12-year-old schoolgirls seeing their favorite boy band up close calling the game. And I mean, we'll get into it with Leo, but I just remember at one point turning to you and saying, like in a commercial, turning to you and saying, "Oh my God, E, he's going to get 70. And you turned to me and you looked at me and goes, "Jonesy, he's going to get 80. And I went, "Oh, he's not getting 80. Like, you know, like this, they'll stop him. Like if they get, start blowing him out, they'll take him out." Remember, Phil did that a couple weeks ago, and because he had 62 after three quarters, about 3 weeks before against Dallas, and Phil didn't want to run up the score and took him out. And like, I say this all the time, you and I, we became fans of history. Like it was, and he needed every one of those 81. What, you know what? We'll wait till Leo comes on and talk about it. Yep. What a memory that is. What a memory.
No, really. It really was, and you and I were calling the game on the radio, and it was Leo Routens and Chuck Swirsky calling the game on TV. So we'll go down memory lane with Leo, and again, we'll talk about tonight's game against the Heat, and we'll discuss the 5-9 start for the Raptors and you know what they need to do to get out of this funk, et cetera, et cetera. But we're going to spend a great deal of time talking about Kobe's 81. We're coming up, unfortunately, to the anniversary, the one-year anniversary of Kobe's passing as well, and I'm sure that's something that we'll discuss on one of our shows next week as well. Lance Kennedy actually just piping in as well, and I forgot about this, Lance, and my apologies for forgetting, but Lance Kennedy was actually working the board, and he was the engineer for that game as well. So
yes,
he was a part of it with us from a distance. We were in L.A. courtside, and there was Lance O back at Raptor Central in Toronto working the game. So, you know, some great memories that, again, we will relive, you know, in about 25, 30 minutes time when Leo Routens join us. In a couple of minutes, John Murphy, the voice of the Buffalo Bills as we gear up for the weekend action in the National Football League postseason. And, of course, the big one, at least for a lot of people in this area, the Bills and the Chiefs. But that's not to say that there aren't a ton of Packers. And I don't know about Bucks. There are a few Bucks fans in this area, but there are a lot of Tom Brady fans. So we'll get into all of that with John Murphy. But, Jonesy, when we talk about being down memory lane, unfortunately, yet again, another day passes. And, unfortunately, another one of the greats passes. And all we now have are memories. And I'll kind of turn it more towards you because with this, with no disrespect intended, it's more of your vintage than mine. You're a few years older than me.
Yeah.
I don't have the same kind of memory bank other than watching highlights, hearing stories, reading stories, et cetera, of the great Hank Aaron, who passed away today at the age of 86.
You know, I grew up in an era when baseball was king, especially, you know, as my trips to the U.S. to visit family. Baseball was where it was at. And kids played. I mean, football didn't have the notoriety. Neither did basketball, for that matter. And it was baseball. And if you had, you know, four kids together on the street or five kids, you could organize a baseball game. You know, a broken down tied box was first base, and the light post over there was second, and you know, in our neighborhood in New York, Miss Avery's fence post was third base, and baseball was king. And it was at a time too when there was, you know, after it wasn't that long after the color line had been broken, that a lot of African Americans broke in and started to become prominent in the game. And Hank Aaron is a guy that, I mean, I'm of that age where I sat on the floor looking at the TV in front of my dad and his cronies, watching Hank Aaron, Bob Gibson, Lou Brock, Curt Flood, like these big names that were African Americans in the sport of baseball that was, you know, basically recently integrated. So I remember the night that Hank Aaron hit the historic homer to pass Babe Ruth, going over that chain link fence in left field into the bullpen, and some guy running on the field when Aaron was between second and third base, and the cheers from our own house, from my dad and a couple of his buddies watching the game. It was something. And again, I say this all the time, and I think I went old man sentimental on you and our producer, Matt Marchese, in our group chat this morning when we were doing show prep and talking about it. Hey man, life sneaks up on you. And if you got things you want to do, do them. And I'm grateful now that as a kid, I was able to see one of the all-time greats of the game in Hank Aaron play. So it's tough. It's tough when you're looking at, you know, we're getting to that age where the people that we watched and gave us thrills are starting to get older and pass away. It's difficult.
Yeah, it really is. And I tell you, Jonesy, just as a quick aside, you know, that's something that you know, in a roundabout way, even our colleague Michael Grange and I were chatting about the other night. You know, Grange sits about 8 feet away from me when we're doing games on Sportsnet from the Raptors practice court there at Scotiabank Arena. And I know you poked your head out into the VOM the other night when the Leafs and Oilers were playing, which, again, they'll go at it again tonight. But, you know, you guys poked your head out and I poked my out, and we were all in different, you know, different VOMs and spaced out and everything else. And when I went and sat back down and was watching the Raptor game and sitting again just down the table from Grange, I said, it's kind of neat, to just be able to, you know, stick your head in there. And he looked at me and he said, he goes, McDavid Matthews, come on, get a chance to see Connor McDavid. And that's, you know, that's one of those guys for today's generation. And I think back, and again, I know you're a few years older than me, but to be able to sit here and say, and your list is even bigger than mine, but to be able to sit here and say that, now listen, because of the jobs we have and the privilege we have as a result of those jobs, we've not only seen some of these people, we've met them or interviewed them, been close to them, etc. But just from a pure fan standpoint, to know that I was able to see live and in person with my own eyes Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson,
yes,
you know, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Steve Yzerman, whether it be Roberto Alomar and Roy Halladay and Ken Griffey Jr. and Barry Bonds, and the list goes on, all these greats, all-time greats that have been part of my life that I've had a chance to see in person as a fan or vis-a-vis my job through the NBA specifically. It's just, it's incredible to think of. And you're right, unfortunately, and, you know, I'm not literally knocking on wood right now, right beside me at the table, you know, hopefully it's in 30, 40, 50 years. If I'm still alive, you're going to be hearing about the passing of X, the passing of Y, and these guys that you grew up, these men and women that you grew up watching and idolizing as young sports fans.
It's really something, Ian. And I guess, you know, looking at it through the lens that we do, when you see somebody, you know, when we get to the Forum 3 years ago, and I'm walking down the ramp and I see Magic Johnson, he comes over and says hello, and it's like, okay, I know I'm supposed to be professional and no picture, but you know what? Hey, Irvin, can we get a picture? Yeah. Hold on a second. My broadcast partner watched you as a kid. Hang on a second. Quick, get out here. Magic Johnson's here. Like, you know, our producer on the TV side, David Leader, you know, which is a funny story, when the Raptors had a preseason game in Ontario, California. And he was in the back fiddling with the camera, and I'm yelling for him. And he's like, he's brushing me off, like, just a minute, Jonesy. I'm like, David, leave the camera and get out here. There's somebody I want you to meet. He's like, oh, okay. And he walks out and he sees Kobe Bryant. And it's like the 10 commandments when Moses has seen, you know, the face of the Lord or the light of the Lord. And his eyes just bug. Like, that's the kind of stuff. And look, we've got our next guest on the line, John Murphy. And it's the same way as, you know, I look at football the same way. When I think of some of the greats that I was able to watch, Jim Brown, and you know, Kenneth Davis made reference to it yesterday. I watched that O.J. Simpson gain over 2,000 yards in a season. Like, those are things that people, you know, the kids that are born now, they don't see those things. It's something they read about or they see on YouTube or something. But we were actually around when that stuff was happening.
Well, and just quickly before we go to John, I know he's waiting patiently, but Jonesy, I want to address one thing, seeing as you brought up as well. It didn't make a lot of noise, but there were a couple people on Twitter that were mentioning, at least to me, and I think you might have fielded a couple of as well, after our interview with Kenneth Davis, where somebody mentioned, oh, I can't believe Kenneth brought up O.J. Simpson. Let's be clear. Nobody is condoning the horrific, horrific events in 1994, but the story that Kenneth was relaying to us was prior to all of that happening. Late 80s, early 90s, the team going on its run, and how veteran players, you know, from Bill's years gone by, were reaching out to other Buffalo Bill players of current day and kind of being that veteran voice, that person to lean on, that one to kind of tell the story or to show that we've got your back. And as I bring now into the conversation John Murphy, the voice of the Buffalo Bills, Murph, how much of that is happening right now, not just with a Steve Tasker or a Jim Kelly, guys that are in the Western New York area, maybe closer to the team, but guys that are even, you know, scattered across the country? We've talked to them, you know, whether it be Kenneth and Daryl Talley and Andre Reed, you know, Steve Christie, guys that we've had on our own show in the last few weeks that are now the fraternity and the alumni coming back and kind of being that voice in the ear of a Josh Allen or a Stephon Diggs or whomever it may be.
The guys who live in this area, Thurman and Jim Kelly and Steve, I mean, they're always around, right? They're always around during the regular season. And, you know, they're not in the building every day, but those guys showing up at practice or watching them practice or certainly coming to home games was a familiar sight. Now, this year has been different, obviously, with COVID. But I've noticed in the last week or two now, there have been a lot of people reaching back, media people reaching out and back to some of the great names and some of the great plays in franchise history. For instance, there was a huge story in the Buffalo News, I think it was yesterday or the day before, basically talking to Carlton Bailey, a little-known linebacker who scored the only Buffalo touchdown in the AFC Championship victory over Denver back in the early 90s, you know. And it was sort of similar to Karen Johnson's touchdown last Saturday night against Baltimore. But it was an amazing touchdown, an important play in franchise history. And, you know, I'm around this team a lot. I haven't seen Carlton Bailey since – I probably haven't seen him in 15 years, but it was good to hear from him and hear what he's up to and hear his memories of that game. And there's been a lot of that going on, I think. A lot where people are kind of reaching out. And to be honest, it has to do with, you know, where the Bills are in the history of the franchise, you know. And that play from Karen Johnson last Saturday, I think everyone immediately, even Josh Allen, who's only been around here for 3 years, said that's a franchise-altering play. And it was. And it was an historic play. And I think one that brought to mind some of the great plays in Bills history. So that's kind of a rewarding and really neat thing to see happen in the face of all the current great plays by the current Buffalo Bills.
Murph, you know, I think of that just before we talk about, you know, the game coming up on Sunday. Isn't that part of it when the team is on and you're making a run and you're still alive, you're still dancing, and there's only a handful of teams left? That, I mean, this is something that some kids growing up in Western New York will remember. You know, if the kid's a 10 or an 11-year-old, when they get to be 30 or 40, like Eric said, they'll remember it. Like, yeah, I remember the Bills and, you know, COVID and 2021, and then they made a run for the Super Bowl, or they won the Super Bowl, or they were in it, or, like, isn't that part of it, though, and it adds to the legacy and the rich history of the team?
Yeah, it's a big part of it. To be honest, it's a big part of it. One I've given a lot of thought to this week, how this Bills team this year, I mean, look, this team has always been well supported here in Buffalo, and the fans are extremely loyal, and they always have been. And they're buying tickets when the team had that incredible 17-year playoff drought. But this year, I think more than ever, has reinforced the Bills' standing among their fan base. And there's a whole new generation of Bills fans created this year. And these are fans now, and I'm talking about people, you know, what age, I don't know what the demographic is, age 15 to 25. They weren't even around when the Bills were making the Super Bowl in the 1990s, and now they have their own team. They don't have to look at the names on the wall or listen to their parents or their uncles tell them about how great Jim Kelly was, how great Andre Reed was. They have their own heroes. They have their own team now. And I think that's been really undersold and really richly rewarding part of the Bills' great season, the 2020 season, is that they've generated a whole new generation of interest in this franchise, and it certainly does bode well for the future.
Speaking with John Murphy, the voice of the Buffalo Bills, you know, Murph, I was, and I'll even just reference to you as well, Jonesy, I was just listening to a podcast before coming on the air about an hour or so ago, and a comedian was mentioning how he felt that comedy is really going to be huge when this is all over, because people just want to laugh. They just want to have a good time. They want to forget about things and how big comedy might be. How big will sports be, and specifically sports or teams, more specifically, good teams? Well, I mean, when people finally feel comfortable again to come back and not just 6,700 fans, but 67,000, and to not have to worry about social distancing. And it's going to be, Murph, it's going to be nice enough just to sit in the stands, even if you're a fan of a terrible team, just to be out, just to be doing something. But if your team is good, and the way that we've all just been starving to kind of live normally again, that's got to be huge for a squad like, you know, the Bills or any other team in any sport that's riding a high right now and riding that good wave.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot. And you know, for me, I mean, working in football, you know, I don't really go to football games to relax. And I don't go to too many games other than Bills games, because I go to a Bills game every week. I've been thinking about a lot of baseball lately and how much I miss just going to a ballpark, whether it's the AAA Bisons, the Blue Jays Farm Club, or, you know, the Blue Jays. This past year, the Blue Jays played here. I just miss going to a ballpark and just being relaxed and taking in the atmosphere and following the game, but also having conversation with friends or family. I can't wait for that to come back. I really can't. And I think it's coming. You know, it might be longer than any of us had hoped, but it is coming. But you're right. You know, we miss that, the kind of informality of being a sports fan, just kind of enjoying yourself and being carefree, at least for a couple of hours. I can't wait till we get back to that.
Yeah, Murph, and that's my broadcast partner at the other end of the line here, and he is one of the most ardent Bills fans I have seen, and there's a lot of them in this area. But this guy loves his team, and I look. Yesterday he asked me what I thought, and yesterday I thought Kansas City. And this morning I woke up and I thought, no, man, Buffalo's on a roll right now. Kansas City sometimes plays fast and loose. And I just, you know, yesterday I thought Kansas City. Today I'm thinking Buffalo, especially to me. And you talked about it early in the year when we had you on, and just a couple weeks ago, too. And it's ringing, it's resonating with me, the way the defense has improved. And look, that game in week six went right down to the wire with Kansas City. I mean, they needed a key first down to keep a drive going to kill the clock. And Buffalo's defense has improved. They're the type of team, Kansas City, when you get a look at them, you get a better chance to beat them the next time. Give me a couple of defensive keys, Murph, because I, you know, this morning I wake up and, like I said, I think Buffalo now.
You know, it was a 9-point loss back in October when they lost to Kansas City in Monday Night Football. But it was closer than that. People say that a lot, but it was. And I've been thinking a lot about who was not there for the Bills, you know, primarily on defense. Matt Milano did not play in that game. He was in the midst of his early season injury issues. And he's come back in the last month or so. Matt Milano's playing the best football he's ever played for the Buffalo Bills. And he's an important guy when it comes to matching someone up with Travis Kelce, the great tight end for Kansas City. They also did not have a couple of others defensively, Levi Wallace, Harrison Phillips, et cetera. But it goes beyond just getting players back. They're still, and this goes to the earlier point a minute ago, they are playing so much better defense. I mean, and that's like a two-month process where ever since the bye week, week 11, they gave up 10 points fewer per game than they did in the first 10 weeks of the season. I mean, that's significant. That is been a major change. A lot of it having to do, I think, with the fact that there was no off-season workouts. There were no off-season workouts, and there were no preseason games. And the preseason itself, the training camp period, was just about a month. I think it took the defense a while to sort of find itself to get the right combinations up front, in particular where they were all new people, and they settled in and have played great over the last couple of months. So I'm not saying that they shut down Kansas City. No one can, but I think they're well equipped to hold them to, you know, I mean, they held them to 26 last time, and that's not insignificant, but should they hold them to 26 points again this coming Sunday, I think the Bills have a chance to win, provided their offense is up to speed.
Speaking with John Murphy, the voice of the Buffalo Bills. Murph, I know last week when we were chatting with you, you talked about the job that the Bills did on Tyreek Hill and containing him in that first game. One of the points that Kenneth Davis mentioned to us yesterday is, and not surprising coming from a running back, the importance of the running game still, if for no other reason than to try and eat the clock and keep Kansas City's offense off the field. Will the Bills be able to do that with Singletary and obviously with Josh Allen running the ball, or is this going to turn into a gunslinger match where we're seeing Josh Allen throw him 35, 40 times because, you know, Buffalo doesn't have enough of the run game? What do you think?
You know, if I were to guess, I would guess they're going to try to throw it. I mean, look what they did last week. You know, they threw it almost exclusively. They chose not to run because they didn't think they could get much done against the Baltimore Ravens run defense. And I think they'll choose to throw it this week because there are opportunities there, opportunities to make plays. The Kansas City defense, I don't think, is as strong as Baltimore's was. They're not, certainly not nearly as physical as Baltimore's was. And I think the Bills should be able to do some business if they throw it and throw it downfield. So I look, you know, they're going to want to run, and especially if they're protecting the lead and if they're trying to run a formatted offense and burn the clock and get first downs, they're going to need to run. And they're going to need to run better than they did last week, for example. But I think primarily the Bills are a passing offense with really good wide receivers, Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley and John Brown. And I think the Chiefs are going to have trouble matching up with that group. So I look for the Bills to look at that as their strength and maybe go that distance, to go that route when they attack the ball of the Kansas City defense.
Murph, what do you think? You just commented on the Monday night game. And I mentioned earlier, I think Kansas City's one of those teams that you don't beat them the first time you see them. Like you need to be aware of some of their tricks and some of the things that they do. I don't think you can beat them cold. And the fact that the Bills have had a shot at them, what does Buffalo have that, you know, maybe Kansas City isn't aware of, or what can they do that the Chiefs might say, hey, wait a minute, maybe prepared is the wrong word, but you caught a little by surprise with this. There's got to be a few things that I think Buffalo are the team is good at that they can throw out that the Chiefs really don't have an answer for.
Well, I mean, offensively, I think the Bills are as diverse as anybody in the league. And by that, I mean, they can do a lot of different things to you. And even though they didn't do it last week, or maybe the last 2 weeks, they can do something that you haven't seen in a while. I think the Bills present problems to their opponents in terms of matchups because they do have a varied and diverse offense, and Josh Allen is in full command and control of the offense. He's a little bit like Mahomes. Mahomes is like this too. They are in complete control of what they're doing offensively. They're getting good coaching from the sideline, but they're comfortable no matter what you ask them to do, and I think that might be an underrated aspect of what the Bills can do offensively. Defensively, as we said a minute ago, they get a couple players back, and I think they're better now and just playing better now than they were back in week six when they saw the Chiefs. And the other thing I think is maybe under the radar is Buffalo's return game. And I mean, kick and punt returns. Andre Roberts has not been great this postseason, but he was great during the regular season. He's a Pro Bowler, and he has shown that he can flip the field and set up the Bills with short fields. And I think that might take at least some fans by surprise once in a while, saying, whoa, they're starting from midfield here because Roberts had a 45-yard kick return. He does that and did that pretty consistently during the course of the regular season.
Speaking with John Murphy, voice of the Buffalo Bills. Murph, you just mentioned Patrick Mahomes. Certainly seems like all signs are pointing towards him playing on Sunday. Not sure if that was ever really in doubt, but that said, officially he is not yet officially cleared concussion protocol, but in all likelihood he does by the time Sunday rolls around. Do you think there was ever any doubt about this, Murph, that that he wouldn't be suiting up for this game?
No, I really don't, and I think it wasn't a severe knock to the head. I think they'll never admit it, at least until after Sunday's game, but I think the Chiefs were probably equally concerned with the toe injury, apparent turf toe or some kind of foot or toe injury that Mahomes has been dealing with, especially last week in their victory over who did they beat last week? I forget. Oh, Cleveland. But I look.
With wow! Come on, Murph. Like I from Eric maybe, but from you? Oh man, A2 Brute. Like oh.
But I think I don't think there was much doubt he was going to play. I mean, right from the start. Andy Reid and the Chiefs never really said the word concussion. And then he's in concussion protocol. It's a five-step process, not necessarily a five-day process. He sort of shot through the early stages of concussion protocol, and it looks like he'll be cleared to play. And, you know, the Chiefs, I asked a former player, a friend of mine, Eric Wood, the other day, are we looking at, you know, are they playing fast and loose with concussion rules? Are they putting the player and his health at jeopardy? And he didn't think so, but I think they might be. And look, the league has – Patrick Mahomes is the number one star in the NFL, not Aaron Rodgers, not Tom Brady. Patrick Mahomes is the NFL, the face of the NFL. The league is interested in having Patrick Mahomes play this Sunday. So if they're going to take it easy on concussion protocol, making sure, you know, this would be the week to do it, I think. So I don't know. I'm sure he'll be fine, and I hope he's fine. I hope for his sake he's ready to go. But I had very little doubt that Mahomes would be ready to play.
Murph, listen, we appreciate the time. As always, thanks for joining us yet again this week. And listen, we'd love to have you back next week if the Bills, well, I mean, win or lose, but especially if they win, then I'm saying that this is the good luck charm. So we got to have you back next week, and we can talk about a Super Bowl preview. Enjoy the game, Murph.
Okay, thanks, fellas.
There is John Murphy, the voice of the Buffalo Bills.
I hope Murph knows that I was sworn in to a temporary membership with the Bills Mafia. Like I hope all our listeners understand that, like, against my better judgment, because when you lose to a team, you're supposed to cheer for them to go all the way so you can say, well, I lost to the champs.
That's true. You are kind of ducking off the course here, Jonesy. So
yeah, I'm breaking
the rules. That. Maybe,
so.
maybe that's what gives you that membership then. That's why we welcome you in then, and we make a seat for you on the bandwagon.
Temporary only, Browns fans. Temporary. It's just like a.
Well, see what happens kinda, though, Jonesy. What happens
just
if the
to kind of get across the border?
Bowl,
you know?
Well, I don't know though. See what we don't want to be used, Jonesy. We don't want to be used either. So I don't know. Now I got to rethink this a little bit. I'm gonna have to talk to my fellow Bills Mafia members and see if we're actually gonna allow this or not. Because you know,
well,
if you're already saying
sit
it's
on
just
the bus.
Temporary, then you know, I don't know.
It is. I'll sit on the bus if you win. I'll deliver a gift at the housewarming and the party, but I ain't coming in to dance with you. I'm sorry.
All right. Like, all right.
I got
right.
my well, own. I got my own dance hall back there that I'm working on.
Well, you can have that dance hall. I've seen what the people in Cleveland look like. I'm joking. I love you, Cleveland. I even visited your fair city on a personal private vacation a couple of years ago with my kid. We went for like 3-4 days and like intentionally went to Cleveland on purpose, not just for work. So I love you, Cleveland. Before we take the break here, hey, do you want to play hockey in your own backyard this winter? Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Rinkmaster are giving away a backyard rink. Enter for your chance to win at sportsnet.ca/590. When we come back, we'll talk about the Toronto Raptors game tonight against the Heat, but also memories of Kobe's 81. Next on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Here until 2 o'clock, Writer's Block comes up at the top of the hour, and then Jonesy and I will be back later on tonight as well for the double dip, double duty today, as we'll have the action between the Heat and Raptors right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Raptors Radio Network. As we want to talk about the Heat and Raptors, but we also want to go down memory lane a little bit, and it might dominate the conversation based on the amount of stories that I'm sure the three of us have to share as we bring into the conversation Raptors television analyst, former NBA, Leo Routens. Leo, thanks for the time today, man.
Always a pleasure, fellas. Everybody good?
We're good.
Everybody's good, Leonard. Everybody's good.
Leo, 15 years ago today, I know I already saw you talking a little bit about it on Twitter, but 15 years ago today, Kobe Bryant puts up 81 points against the Raptors, and that's kind of what I was referring to in terms of where the conversation may lend towards or lead towards over these next few minutes, not necessarily about the Raptors and Heat. What stands out for you most, Leo, when you think back to that night in L.A.?
What stands out to me is the Raptors had that game. You know, first half,
yes.
Kobe had good numbers. Kobe had good numbers in the first half, but nobody else was doing anything. So it was one of those where, okay, Kobe can score, keep everybody at bay, and you're in good shape. Even early in the third quarter, the Raptors were in control. And to the point, and as much as he chooses to dispute this, I egged on Chuck Swirsky at the time. I said, hey, Chuck, come on, salami and cheese, man. This game's over. And he finally did it, and he denies it to this day because I think he's using as reference the Raptors game in an hour, which probably cut that out. So he says, check the tape. I'm sure that's the tape he's talking about. But besides that, so you think about it, he had 81 points. And I'm guessing that 65 of that was necessary, right? You had and the rest was icing on the cake. But for the Lakers to win that game, Kobe put up some serious numbers, taking this team from being down big to winning that game. And again, just that you know, that last 10 to 15 points was the topping. Everything else was essential, and that tells you a lot about, you know, who he was and what he was capable of doing.
Leo, and I said that too. You know, we talked about it. They needed every one of those points, I thought. And you know, there are people that say to us, well, you know, why didn't you take a hard foul, or why didn't you, you know, do this or do that on the defensive end? But I don't think people realize, and we actually had a chance to speak to Kobe a couple years later about it. We were in the hallway. I just told part of the story about David Leiter almost blowing his chance to meet Kobe, and Sherman Hamilton asked him. He said, so, like, when you get going, and Kobe stuck his bottom lip out, looking like a brown turtleneck, and he was shaking his head going, no, there's nothing they could have done. I was in that zone. And there was nothing they could have done. I was shooting over people. I was driving by them. There's nothing they could have done. And Leo, when you look back at we were at the game, but when you look back at the video, didn't it seem like that? Like no matter what defense was thrown at him, this guy was figuring out a way to get past it.
Yeah, and then again, go back to what I was saying. Like, he was scoring, and it didn't matter, right? The Raptors were winning. He was scoring. So it kind of puts the defense at a kind of, okay, this isn't a big deal, all right? He's going to get his numbers. We're going to win the game. And two things are happening. Your defense is getting into a funk, and the guy you're letting score is getting into the groove in a big way. And I completely agree. Once it got to that point where now you're in a game, well, adios, it's over. Because now you're in a game, and this guy is absolutely out of his mind. And, you do have the option of just flat out saying, okay, we're just going to send two guys on them, and that's going to be it. Well, okay, yeah. Well, hey, the Lakers weren't that bad. You're just going to completely take the ball out of his hands with two guys. Somebody's going to be open. Somebody's going to score. And you still got a serious problem. So, you know, it was one of those where, hey, you don't want to be the team it happened to. At the same time, it was an incredible show and something that everybody that saw that game is certainly going to remember.
Speaking with Leo Routens, Raptors television analyst. Leo, I've told this story many times before, and Jonesy, I know you and I have gotten into this discussion. The cool thing about that night, you know, just on a purely selfish perspective as well, was when we were leaving the arena, when all was said and done, and Jonesy, I credit you for being the one to kind of think about it and say, hey, do it, grab one. I never keep the box scores, like rarely keep the box scores. If I do, it's just for research purposes. You know, going into the next game, you quickly read up the stats, and then you usually chuck it. And Jonesy said, make sure you grab a box score. So I get a box score, and years later, 2015, All-Star game in Toronto, and Jonesy through his brother Mark and through Nico at Nike and all these various guys, there's an opportunity to meet Kobe and I swear to you, if I could let folks into my house to show them so they'd believe me, I'm telling you folks, God's honest truth, working in the NBA and with the Raptors for almost 25 years now, I personally own or have one autograph. It's not part of my thing. It's, and I know it's against the journalistic code and all this stuff and whatever else. I have one autograph, and I threw any rules out the window when I had a chance, thanks to Jonesy, in 2015 to get Kobe Bryant to autograph the box score from the 81-point game. And that's the only piece of like autograph memorabilia I have in my home right now is the autographed Kobe Bryant 81-point game. And it's just, Leo, you've encountered so much over the course of your career as a player, as a coach, as a broadcaster. I have to assume that outside of maybe the Raptors championship, where does that Kobe Bryant 81 rank for you?
Well, first of all, I give you a pass on that. That was definitely worth it. I as well have that box score. I have it somewhere. I don't have a clue as to where it might be, but I have it. And, you know, I knew Kobe from when he was just a little guy. You know, his dad, Jelly Bean Joe, was playing over in Italy. And at one point, he was in a town right by our town in Rome. And so we used to scrimmage them as well as and play them. So, you know, little Kobe would be running all around the gym. And so I used to see him when he was just a little guy. And I knew his dad well. And over the years, I talked to Kobe a fair amount. So I had toyed with the idea as well. Okay, I got this box score. I'll just bring it by one day and just have Kobe sign it for the heck of it, you know, for my boys. And never got around to it. Now I regret it. So you certainly have something special. And yeah, I mean, we encounter a lot of cool things when we're doing our job, and you see some incredible performances. You know, Kawhi's shot. You know, like you said, a championship. And when you talk about, you know, I remember when John Saunders and I were doing the games, and you know, Vince Carter. You know, every night we'd just look at each other, going, "Did he just do that?" You know, like. That was a different dunk, right? And certainly, you know, what Kobe did that night was right up there, right? You look back at those special memories you have, and you know, the cool thing is we get those courtside seats to appreciate them all.
Yeah, Leo, and it's funny because I said that. I guess having been around the team since day one, and there were things, and Eric, you talk about autograph memorabilia. The only box score I have autographed is Damon Stoudemire had the first ever franchise triple-double. And, Leo, remember those days, we used to actually ride on the bus because there was only one bus. We used to ride on the bus with the players. And I happened to get into a seat on the bus where Damon was across the aisle from me. I'm like, I looked at him. I said, yo, man, you just made history. Like, that's the first triple-double. And it was against Seattle on national TV on TNT. And I was looking at the box score, and he said, Jonesy, let me see that. And I passed him the box score across the aisle, and I said, hey, man, why don't you put your name on that thing? And he signed it. And I meant for him, like, keep it. And he signed it, and he gave it back to me. So I've got it sitting. It's in a red binder somewhere. And Eric and I joke about the Kobe thing because Kobe kept asking me, do you have your, like, and Leo, I have in a plastic case, not just the box score, but I have the game notes where it says at the bottom, the Los Angeles Lakers welcome Chuck Swirsky and Leo Routens, Toronto TV, Paul Jones and Eric Smith, Toronto Radio, Dan Gladman. Right. Producer, like John Russell, like everybody's name is on the bottom. And I remember asking LAPR, John Black, saying, so like, am I going to see any movie stars here tonight? And he looked at me and went, it's a Sunday night in January for Toronto. And like his face was like, no, incredulous. Like, no, they've all gone skiing. Most of them in Vail. Like, who do you think you are? Like the Celtics? And I, at the end of the night, I saw him on the way out when I was grabbing box scores. And I said, too bad some people missed a good night, huh? He said, yep, too bad. So you're right, though. We get to do special things. And it's a night that will always stick with me. And Eric took a picture of Kobe walking off the floor with his flip phone. He put it up and looked at me.
I just posted it.
I'm like, he's like, Jonesy, should I? I'm like, dude. History supersedes all of this. Unless you were seeing Wilt's 100, we're next in line.
Well, it's too bad we didn't have the phones that we carry around today. I'm sure it would have been a whole different memory bank, you know?
Hey, Leo, switching gears a little bit and focusing on tonight's game against the Heat. Jones and I were chatting yesterday, kind of doing the post-mortem of that game on Wednesday night. That was a frustrating one to watch because, you know, I know we don't play the games on paper, but you look at the Heat and who they were missing in that game, and the Raptors are rolling, having won three straight. Nick's talking about having settled in on a rotation. We're starting to get a sense of what this team is all about. And then they were just flat, especially in the second half, and definitely in that fourth quarter. What do you think Toronto needs to do, Leo, tonight to kind of bounce back, get back on track, and prove that they can, you know, tackle that zone that Eric Spoelstra and the Heat continue to throw at Toronto?
Well, you know, first, let me say it. I think people got to keep a perspective on a shorthanded team. You know, you look at Andre Iguodala, you know, do we need to go through his history and what he is? Goran Dragic, all-star. Duncan Robinson, already one of the all-time great three-point shooters in NBA history. So you can go look at that roster and say, you know, Bam Adebayo is certainly going to have an incredible career. He's an all-star. You really have to go through, you know, the whole roster and say, oh, there's nobody here. There's still a lot there. And we all know in the NBA, you know, you don't do what you're supposed to do, you're going to take an L. And it just seemed that the Raptors just got frustrated, right? And how many games have we seen full-staffed or shorthanded, whatever the case may be, against Miami, that kind of an outcome? And when you play Miami, you got to be disciplined at both ends. Miami's going to be physical. They're going to be aggressive. They're going to force you to do things you don't necessarily want to do. They're going to make you make decisions offensively. And if you're not ready to do that, if you get soft, if you get comfortable, you're going to have a hard time. And what they did is a really good job of, you know, their zones and switching and just forcing the Raptors into situations where it just became difficult for them to score. And they didn't get a lot of movement. They didn't get a lot of good screening. And that transition game wasn't there, right? The best way to beat a zone is not play against the zone. Just get the ball down the floor quickly. So, you know, give Miami credit there. And then at the other end, you know, Nick Nurse said it himself that, you know, they just made a lot of mistakes. They were a step slow. And Miami, you know, one of the things we saw when they went to the finals, they just have tremendous movement, right? They set screens. They keep moving. They don't stop. They got cutters. They're backdooring. They're doing all kinds of things. And it's one of those teams when you play against, you have to be fundamentally sound. You got to communicate. And if you're a step slow and you're not communicating, you're going to have those lobs and buckets that really kill you. And dribble penetration as well is a big issue. If you're not going to stop the ball, contain the ball, you're just going to set, you know, everybody up for all kinds of easy scores. So I think there was a lot to clean up in that game. But, you know, I go back to, you know, the crazy thing about how nuts that bubble was this summer. In my opinion, the best game the Raptors played in the entire bubble was their game against Miami. And from start to finish, it was a 48-minute game, complete game. And that's the way you got to play the Heat. It's got to be 48 minutes. If it's not 48 minutes, you're going to have a long night.
Leo, I know we're up against the clock, but just a quick one for you here. How can the Raptors' pace impact the game?
Well, again, same thing. You don't want to play Miami in a 5-on-5. You don't want to play them in a half court. It's just a lot of work. So if you can play good defense, get the rebound, get out and run, and even if they score, we saw this in the first half, the Raptors pushed that ball up the floor. They stopped doing that. Raptors scored a lot of points in the first half because they were pushing and playing with pace. So, you know, it helps you regardless, whether they score or don't score, to play with pace.
Leo, appreciate the time today, man. All these stories down memory lane as well, and we'll look forward to seeing you again in a couple of days. Thanks for this.
Sounds good, fellas. Talk to you later.
There is Leo Routens, Raptors television analyst, former NBAer, and all that chatter about the Raptors and Lakers and the Kobe Bryant 81-point performance, a reminder to all of you, or maybe it's not a reminder, maybe it's just an announcement, if you hadn't already heard, Sportsnet 1 will be airing the 81-point game today at 5:30 Eastern. So if you want to relive it, I know it hurts a little bit if you're a Raptor fan, but it's still history, and it's one of the all-time great performances. 5:30 Eastern on Sportsnet 1, Kobe's 81-point game. And Jonesy and I back later on tonight on the radio with the call of the Heat and Raptors 7:30 tip-off. We'll take the break, come back, and get you set for Writer's Block. It's Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith and Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. We're giving you the chance to meet Joe Thornton virtually. Well, he might have to meet with a few folks. He's got that busted rib now. He's going to be out a month. He can maybe do a few more of these, not just one winner. We'll see if we can negotiate that with Jumbo Joe. But for now, just tune in every weekday for keywords and text them to 590-590 for your chance to enter. Your next keyword will be announced at 4:20 during Writer's Block. For more details on how to meet Jumbo Joe, visit sportsnet.ca/590. Speaking of injuries, Jonesy, we were just talking about the Toronto Raptors game tonight against the Heat. Of note, and this is not to say that they won't play, but the first injury report comes out right around 1:30 each day. Kyle Lowry listed as questionable tonight with injury illness and also right foot soreness. And also Pascal Siakam, injury illness, questionable with left groin soreness. The Kyle one's kind of new, at least to me, but the Pascal one, not a major surprise.
We saw Pascal,
the awkward fall that he had last game.
Yeah, on the dunk. We'll see, if they can go. I guess the Raptors being honest, putting it out there, but hopefully if you're a Raptor fan, you see those guys in the lineup and try to get back in the winning column.
Jimmy Butler out again tonight. Tyler Hero, who missed last game, is questionable. Myers Leonard out again as well. So, again, it's 7:30 tonight, Raptors and Heat. We will have it for you right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Thanks to Leo Routens for joining us, and also thanks to John Murphy, the voice of the Buffalo Bills. On Monday, when we're back at 1 o'clock Eastern, we're going to be talking about the Buffalo Bills going to the Super Bowl against the Green Bay Packers.
Wow.
All right, Jonesy.
Buffalo,
that's
Tampa.
Do it.
You're going to get right. Brady. You're going to get Brady in a situation you don't want him in.
Bring it on. Give me the goat. I want him. All right, folks. Writer's Block is next. It's been Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.